Amos from Brother Amos. I prepared a little synopsis of the book of Amos. No doubt you've already had a chance to look at it. So I won't quite too much dwell on this particular thing. Except to say that, apologies, I'm not going to tackle the prophecy as such. I'm just going to look more at Prophet Amos, his character, his social standing, the background, the historical background to the land, and various other things. Amos is considered to be one of the few prophets to write down the message he received from Yahweh, and which he delivered against the northern kingdom of Israel. His name is from the Hebrew verb amas, meaning to lift a burden, to carry. That is a burden bearer. The prophet Moses wrote down his teachings, but his prophecies were chiefly through the types and shadows instituted under divine direction. King David wrote down his teachings in the Psalms, in a poetic form. But the prophetic language used was not discerned to be prophecies until Christ and the apostles revealed them. Yahweh called Amos and sent him to these regions to denounce idolatry, warn the people of the impending judgments indicated with the overthrow of the people of Israel, unless they changed direction from their current way of life. And there's a promise of a restoration. The delivery of the divine proclamation is unique. Its clarity, its strength, its picturesque use of images, which no doubt Amos could draw from his own rural and pastoral life. In this, the character of the book is unique. And Amos 1 verse 1 says, "The words of Amos, who was among the herdmen of Tekoa, which he saw concerning Israel in the days of Uzziah king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam the son of Joash king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake." That verse actually validates the genuine character of Amos's prophetic work. So in what time period? Well, we've already read it. What time period can we place the book of Amos? It would appear that Amos lived approximately 100 years before the 100 years after the prophet Elijah, and about the same length of time before the prophet Isaiah. Amos was also contemporary with Hosea and Joel. In Amos, as we read, we're told that he prophesied during the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, that is Jeroboam the second, the son of Joash, king of Israel, which was 2 years before the earthquake. Now, the earthquake happened shortly after Amos' ministry and would have been interpreted as a sign of approaching judgment. And references to an earthquake are found in that first verse and also in the chapter that we had read for us, Amos chapter 9. Verse 1. "I saw Yahweh standing upon the altar. He said, 'Smite the lintel of the door, that the post may shake, and cut them in the head, all of them. And I will slay the last of them with the sword. He that fleeth of them shall not flee away. He that escapeth of them shall not be delivered.'" The word shake indicates an earthquake. Also, verse 5. And the Adonai Yahweh of hosts is he that toucheth the land, and it shall melt. And all that dwell therein shall mourn, and shall rise up wholly like a flood, and shall be drowned as by the flood of Egypt. Now possibly the verb hafak, I think that's the way they say it, meaning to overturn, at chapter 3, verse 17. Hear ye and testify in the house of Jacob, saith Adonai Yahweh, the Elohim of hosts, that in the day that I shall visit the transgressions of Israel upon him, I will also visit the altars of Bethel, and the horns of the altar shall be cut off and fall to the ground. And I will smite the winter house with the summer house, and the houses of ivory shall perish, and the great houses shall have an end, saith Yahweh. Also, chapter 4, verse 11. I have overthrown some of you, as Elohim overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah, and ye were as a firebrand plucked out of the burning, yet have ye not returned unto me, saith Yahweh. Chapter 6, and verse 11. For behold, Yahweh commandeth, and he will smite the great house with breaches, and the little house with clefts. And chapter 8, verse 8. Shall not the land tremble for this, and everyone mourn that dwelleth therein? And it shall rise up fully as a flood, and it shall be cast out and drowned as by the flood of Egypt. It's possibly the verb overturn also refers to an earthquake, as well as chapter 2 and verse 13 of Amos. Behold, I am pressed unto you as a cart is pressed that is full of sheaves. And also chapter 6, verse 9. And it shall come to pass that there remain 10 men in one house, that they shall die. And a man's uncle shall take him up, and he that burneth him to bring out the bones of the, out of the house, and shall say unto him that is by the sides of the house, is there yet any with thee? And he shall say, no. Then shall he say, hold thy tongue, for we may not make mention of the name of Yahweh. But behold, Yahweh commandeth, and he will smite the great house with breaches, and the little house with clefts. And there's archaeological evidence of a strong earthquake in that region in the days of Uzziah and Jeroboam. That has left a lasting impact, and it is evident that it did exist. If you go to Zechariah chapter 14. Verse 5. Ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Azon. Yea, ye shall flee, but as he fled from before the earthquake, in the days of Uzziah king of Judah. And Yahweh my Elohim shall come, and all the saints with thee. Compare that also with 2 Chronicles chapter 26. Chronicles 26, verse 16. But when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. For he transgressed against Yahweh as Elohim, and went into the temple of Yahweh to burn incense upon the altar of incense. And Azariah the priest went in after him, and with him fourscore priests of Yahweh that were valiant men. And they withstood Uzziah the king, and said unto him, it appertaineth not unto thee, Uzziah, to burn incense unto Yahweh, but to the priests, the sons of Aaron, that are consecrated to burn incense. Go out of the sanctuary, for thou hast trespassed. Neither shall it be for thy honour from Yahweh Elohim. Then Uzziah was wroth, and had a censer in his hand to burn incense. And while he was wroth with the priest, the leprosy rose up in his forehead before the priest in the house of Yahweh, from beside the incense altar. And Azariah the chief priest and all the priests looked upon him, and behold, he was leprous in his forehead. And they thrust him out from thence. Yea, he himself hasted also to go out, because Yahweh had smitten him. And Uzziah the king was a leper until the day of his death. and dwelt in a several house within a leper. But he was cut off from the house of Yahweh, and Jotham his son was over the king's house, judging the people of the land. Now, the rest of the acts of Uzziah first and last is Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, wrote. So Isaiah slept with his fathers, and they buried him with his fathers in the field of the burial, which belonged to the kings. They said, he is a leper. And Jotham, his son, reigned in his stead. Now excavations throughout the land of Israel and Jordan has revealed evidence of this catastrophic earthquake. Geologists write, masonry walls best displayed the earthquake, especially walls with broken ashlars, walls with displaced rows of stones, walls still standing but leaning or bowed, and walls collapsed with large sections still lying course on course. There were debris at six sites: Hazor, Deir Awa, Giza, Lachish, Tel Judaida, and En Hasaba. Is tightly confined stratigraphically to the middle of the 8th century BC, with some dating errors of about 30 years. The earthquake was at least magnitude 7.8, but was likely 8.2. This severe geological disaster has been linked historically to a speech delivered at the city of Bethel by a shepherd farmer named Amos of Tekoa. And this geological evidence of Giza dates the earthquake at 760 BC. We know that Uzziah was co-regent with his father Amaziah from 792 to 767 BC and ruled independently from 767 to 740 BC, a reign of 52 years. Hence, the reference to Jeroboam II can help us to pinpoint the period in which Amos delivered his prophetic message to the northern kingdom. It is widely accepted chronology that Jeroboam II was co-regent with his father Joash in 793-792 and became sole regent in 782-781 and died in late summer of the fall of 753 BC. So Amos' prophecy falls within this period. Assuming that the prophecy took place after Uzziah became sole regent in 768-767, Amos' prophecy can be dated to sometime after that, sometime before Jeroboam's death in 753 BC, with the earthquake 2 years after that. These dates are consistent with the dates given by the archaeologists. That is 760 BC. Now then, Amos. What of the man Amos? There's nothing actually mentioned about his genealogy in the Bible. In fact, it's not mentioned anywhere. While it's difficult to provide any specific details of his history, we're not left without any information, because he reveals certain details of his life in the book that he has written. And this is what the book itself tells us. In his youth, he lived at Tekoa. And it's most likely the village of this name, 6 miles south of Bethlehem, in Judah, south of Jerusalem. It is understood that Tekoa was the center of a large sheep farming district. It's likely that he was Judean. After all, Amaziah, the priest of Bethel, called him by the Judean term for prophet, Hosea, and tried to persuade him to go back to Judah to preach. Though Amos came from the southern kingdom of Judah, his prophetic message was aimed at the northern kingdom of Israel. So particularly the cities of Samaria and Bethel, to denounce the idolatry then prevalent. He doesn't indicate whether he was a rich or a poor shepherd. His inference about his intelligence and education, probably from the anger of his words. It seems that many commentators feel that his sharp criticism of the rich and of oppression make it clear that he was a poor shepherd. Yet few ordinary shepherds in Israel would share his knowledge of the regions beyond their homeland. Amaziah himself was impressed with his speeches and actually calls him a professional prophet, which Amos denied. Says that if you turn to Amos chapter 7. Amos chapter 7, verse 12. Also Amaziah said unto Amos, without seer, go, flee thee away into the land of Judah, and there eat bread, and prophesy there. But prophesy not again any more at Bethel, for it is the king's chapel, and it is the king's queen. Then answered Amos and said to Amaziah, I was no prophet, neither was I a prophet's son, but I was an herdman and a gatherer of sycamore fruit. And Yahweh took me as I followed the flock, and Yahweh said unto me, go, prophesy unto my people Israel. But it does suggest that he was an educated man. Amos describes his occupations, as we read in Amos 1, verse 1, that he was a shepherd. The Hebrew word, the Hebrew word noker describes a man who tended a particular, small, rugged, speckled variety of sheep called nakon, which required less food and could live well in the desert, and which produced a wool of superior quality and of great value. In Amos 7 and verse 14, as we read, he's a herdsman. The Hebrew word bokur describes one who raises or tends cattle. Again, in 7:14, we read, he was a farmer, a cultivator of sycamore figs. And this was the wild mulberry fig, sikkim in Hebrew, which exuded a ball of sap when nipped at the right season and which hardened into a sort of edible fruit, which the lower classes were able to afford. Now this type of fig has been cultivated since ancient times. It grows naturally in Lebanon, the southern Arabian Peninsula, in Cyprus, in localized areas of Madagascar, and has been naturalized in southern Israel and Egypt. In its native habitat, the tree is usually found in rich soils along rivers and in mixed woodlands. The tree was found at a lower altitude in Tekoa. So it is likely that the sheep farmers of Tekoa in Amos' day were semi-nomadic. But while it is true that sycamore figs do not grow and fruit in the highlands, they are found lower near the Dead Sea. So it's likely Amos had to do some traveling, perhaps to the Dead Sea region, to tend these trees. This tree is of great importance and was very extensively used. It's almost exclusive to the Egyptians. It was the ancient Egyptian tree of life, they say. And the fruit and the timber, and sometimes even the twigs, are richly represented in the tombs of early, middle, and late kingdoms. Egypt was the principal area of the sycamore fig development. And some of the caskets of mummies in Egypt are actually made from the wood of this tree. Amos was no stranger to the military, social, and economic conditions and practices of the rich and poor people of his day. As he traveled to the wool and cattle markets of Israel and Judah, it's little wonder then that among the palaces and temples of Bethel, Amos was shocked, astounded with their riotous living, and certainly felt out of place and a stranger. He felt different to the people there. Firstly, he was a foreigner in the land. He was a countryman, so they looked down on. And they obviously recognized he was used to rough living. Again, in Amos chapter 7, verse 14, then answered Amos and said to Amaziah, I was no prophet, neither was I a prophet's son. He makes a distinction that he was of humble birth. His parents were not distinguished or renowned for their contemporaries. He was not a prophet's son. He wasn't educated in the school of the prophets. And it was in this humble position that Yahweh called unto him and said, go, prophesy unto my people Israel. Amos may not have been a wealthy or affluent shepherd, but he was sent to warn those who sat back and enjoyed their indulgences. His social status was of no importance to Yahweh. The message from Yahweh was, brothers and sisters, it's the same today, is it not? We can only arrive at the conclusion that is what the Eternal Spirit intended. As it says in 2 Peter chapter 1, we have also a more sure word of prophecy, whereunto we do well that we take heed, as unto a light that shineth in a dark place, until the day dawn, and the day star arise in your hearts. Knowing this first, that no prophecy of the Scripture is of any private interpretation, for the prophecy came not in old time by the will of man, but holy men of God spake, as they were moved by the Holy Spirit. The one commentator describes, unlike the priests of his day, Amos sent a stark warning to them of impending judgment for their wicked ways. There was not in Amos the sympathy, the warm blood and feeling of the statesman or citizen, but a cold sense of justice and right. He was the stern prophet of justice and righteousness. For their spirit was summed up in the word loving kindness. Amos is summed up in one word, justice. The dark days in which he lived called for a man of sturdy moral fiber and fearlessness. Such was Amos. His character, molded in the harsh terrain of the wilderness of Tekoa, enabled him to stand before the priest and the people, proclaiming the word Yahweh had given him. At the call of Yahweh, he left his home in Judea to proclaim a hostile message in the proud capital of the northern kingdom of Israel. Without any status as a recognized prophet, he braved the prejudices of the Ephraimite public to carry out faithfully his commission from Yahweh. A man of rugged convictions and iron will, he could not be deflected from his purpose, even by the highest functionary of the Samaritan hierarchy. I thought that was an excellent description of Amos. Iron will, able to fulfill the commission. And brothers and sisters, we clearly see the character suitable to fulfill Yahweh's plan and purpose. As Isaiah says in 62 verse 2, "For all those things that my hand made, and all those things have been," said Yahweh, "but to this man will I look, even to him that is poor, and of a contrite spirit, and trembleth at my word." Again in Luke 18:14, "I tell you, this man went down to his house justified, rather than the other. For everyone that exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted." In James chapter 4 verse 6, "That he giveth more grace. Wherefore he saith, God resisteth the proud, but giveth grace unto the humble." And that speaks of Amos. That was Amos's character, his integrity, his honor above all his contemporaries. What did he face? Let's look at the background of the northern kingdoms. The northern kingdom of Israel had reached one of their highest points of prosperity and peace. Jeroboam extended his borders almost to those of the old Davidic kingdom. There was also peace with the southern kingdom, Judah. And after a long period of conflict, it was now a spirit of cooperation and mutual enterprise. And this resulted in the free flow of trade and commerce between the two kingdoms. So you can see Amos, as a herdsman, as a shepherd, as a farmer, would have been caught up in this trade. Hence, his education by experience, his own personal experience. It was a time of great economic well-being and national strength. The increase in wealth also led to extensive building programs. The simple brick of earlier days gave way to buildings of hewn stone and ivory decorations. Go to Amos chapter 3. Verse 15. "And I will smite the winter house with the summer house, and the houses of ivory shall perish, and the great houses shall have an end," said Yahweh. They had winter houses, they had summer houses. It's almost like today, isn't it? You live in England in a house. And somewhere else in the country, or even abroad, you have a holiday home. Isn't that the same today as the day it was in the days of Amos? They have winter houses, they have summer houses. Holiday homes. They have houses of ivory. And houses of well-hewn stone. They reclined on beds of ivory. Amos chapter 6, verse 4. "But we started books. Oh, that's right. That lie upon beds of ivory and stretch themselves on their couches, and eat the lambs out of the flock, and the calves out of the midst of the saw, that chant to the sound of the viol, and invent to themselves instruments of music like David. The drinking wine, drink wine in bowls, and anoint themselves with the chief ointments. But they are not grieved with the affliction of Joseph. Therefore now they shall go captive with the first that go captive, and the banquet of them that stretch themselves shall be removed." They lived in an affluent society. What's different today? We see the same happening today. There's no change. In short, they were at ease, lazy, indulgent. Amos chapter 5, verse 24. But let judgment run down as waters, and righteousness as a mighty stream. Have ye offered unto me sacrifices and offerings in the wilderness 40 years, O house of Israel? Have ye borne the tabernacle of your Moloch, and your Chayim, your images, the star of your God, which you made to yourselves? They are gone away, an apostasy. Amos chapter 5 and verse 1. Hear ye this word which I take up against you, even a lamentation of the house of Israel. The virgin of Israel is fallen, she shall rise no more. She is forsaken upon a land, there is none to raise her up. But thus saith Adonai Yahweh, the city that went out by 1,000 shall leave 100, and that which went forth by 100 shall leave 10 for the house of Israel. But thus saith Yahweh unto the house of Israel, seek ye me, and ye shall live. But seek not Bethel, nor enter into Gilgal, and pass not to be a Sheba. For Gilgal shall surely go into captivity, and Bethel shall come to naught. Seek Yahweh, and he shall live, lest he break out like fire in the house of Joseph, and devour it, and there be none to quench it in Bethel. You turn judgment to wormwood, and leave up righteousness in the earth. Seek him that maketh the seven stars and Orion, and turneth the shadow of death into morning, and make the day dark with night, that calleth the waters of the sea, and calleth them out upon the face of the earth. Yahweh is his name, that strengtheneth the spoiled against the strong, so that the spoiled shall come against the fortress. They hate him that rebuketh in the gate, and they abhor him that speaketh uprightly. For as much therefore as your treading is upon the poor, and ye take from him burdens of wheat, ye build houses of hewn stone, but he shall not dwell in them. Ye have planted pleasant vineyards, but he shall not bring wine of them. For I know your manifold transgressions, and your mighty sins. No different to the days of Amos than today, is there? For Amos, justice in public life, that is setting up justice in the gates, as in verse 15, is the same as seeking good, not evil. And this in turn is what seeking Yahweh means. Compare the descriptions in chapter 5 and verse 7. You will turn judgment to wormwood and leave off righteousness in the earth with verse 10. They hate him that rebuketh in the gate, and they abhor him that speaketh uprightly. For as much therefore as your treading is upon the poor, and you take from him burdens of wheat, you build houses of hewn stone. I know your manifold works, your manifold transgressions, your mighty sins. They afflict the just, they take a bribe, and they turn aside the poor in the gate from their right. I know your works, and for that Yahweh refused to accept them. And the reason for judgment concerns the abuse of privileges. So in the proclamation against Israel, in chapter 2 of Amos, verse 6, thus saith Yahweh, for three transgressions of Israel, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they sold the righteous for silver, and the poor for a pair of shoes. There was an abuse of wealth, selling the needy and the righteous. Yet those with wealth should protect and support their needy neighbors according to their law. Deuteronomy chapter 15. Verse verse 7, if there be among you a poor man or one of thy brethren, in any of thy gates in thy land, which Yahweh thy Elohim giveth thee, thou shalt not harden thine heart, nor shut thine hand from thy poor brother, but thou shalt open thine hand wide unto him, and thou shalt surely lend him sufficient for his needs in that which he wanteth. That was in their law. They flouted that law. They abused that wealth that Yahweh had given them. There was an abuse of position, pushing aside the humble, enjoying the fruit of taxes and fines. Chapter 2 and verse 7. The pant after the dust of the earth on the head of the poor, and turn aside the way of the meek. And a man and his father will go in unto the same maid to profane my holy name. And they lay themselves down upon clothes laid to pledge by every altar, and they drink the wine of the condemned in the house of their God. And there is also abuse of family values. Yahweh does not tolerate the like. He did not tolerate Israel, because their leaders have corrupted the nation. And so there is only one remedy. The time of plenty would end. Amos chapter 3, verse 1. Hear this word that Yahweh has spoken against you, O children of Israel, against the whole family which I brought up from the land of Egypt, saying, you only have I known of all the families of the earth. Therefore I will punish you for all your iniquities. Then in chapter 6, verse 7. Therefore now shall they go captive with the first that go captive, and the banquet of them that stretch themselves shall be removed. Adonai Yahweh has sworn by himself, saith Yahweh the Elohim of hosts, I have borne the excellency of Jacob, and hate his palaces. Therefore will I deliver up the city with all that is therein. And it shall come to pass if there remain 10 men in one house, that they shall die. God's judgments upon Israel and one of this world annihilate the wicked, because Yahweh knows their manifold transgressions, their manifold iniquities. Again, one commentator said, concurrently with the increased wealth, there was an associated rise in those social evils which characterized the prosperity of Solomon's reign. The rich became very rich, and the poor became even poorer. As their economic well-being and national strength continued to foster their security, an internal decay was eating at their vitals. Yes, the people had religion. People of today have religion. But like in the days of Amos, today's religion is far from being spiritual. There was an outward showing of the numerous sacrifices which they offered in accordance with the law of Moses. They socialized in singing and dancing with a presumption that this pleased Yahweh. I received a recent email again. What can we expect? Extravagant in every way. Tithes were offered every 3 days. Free will offerings were abundant, and worse still, the amounts were actually advertised. Amos chapter 4, verse 4. Come to Bethel and transgress. When you read words like that in the scripture, it goes against the grain. You're invited to come to the city for worship. No, come to Bethel and transgress. It's an open invitation. As Gilgal multiply transgression and bring your sacrifices every morning and your tithes after 3 years and offer a sacrifice of thanksgiving with leaven and proclaim and publish the free offerings. This maketh you, O ye children of Israel, saith the Lord Yahweh. They publicized this. And that email was shocking. And it actually came to the Christadelphians as well. When I first came to the truth, I was shocked, even then, at the farm dances that were being published. Things haven't much changed, have they? It's shocking to be told, come to Bethel. What do you want to come to Bethel? To worship God. No! Transgress! It's just unbelievable. No wonder Amos was shocked. Yeah, they have religion, but they're far from being pleasing to Yahweh. Amos insisted that Yahweh had no time for their worldliness. Imagine the impact of his message. His fearless, his outspoken words came like a thunder. It stirred the people against him. And characteristics are the words of Amos chapter 1, verse 2. He said, Yahweh will roar from Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem. And the habitations of the shepherds shall mourn, and the top of Carmel shall wither. By the shepherds, he means the leaders of Israel, who failed their flock. And the top of Carmel were likewise those sitting at the top, the rulers of the day, who, as Yahweh has said to us through Amos, will be the first to be struck down. But before admonishing the Jewish people, Amos had another commission. He had much to say about the adjoining nations. He spoke of the transgressions of Damascus, Gaza, Tyre, Edom, Ammon, and Moab, all the neighbors of the two Jewish kingdoms, who would suffer the consequences of their evil ways. Then he addresses himself to Judah, Israel and Judah. And the impact of his message, all they heard from him was doom and gloom and impending judgments. It was much the same as was the kings. You know, every time he went to the priest, oh, he would say these things, and he wasn't happy with that, and he put him in prison. So Joshua comes home. We've got a priest. Yes, we've got a priest to imprison, and then he tells the same story. And Joshua came to fruition. The king died. Here it is again. All that he spoke was not what they wanted. The annunciation of Israel occurs in chapter 3 to 6 and in chapter 7, 9 to 17. In Amos 2, verse 4, thus saith Yahweh, for 3 transgressions of Judah and for 4, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have despised the law of Yahweh, and have not kept his commandments, and their lies caused them to err after the which their fathers have walked. In similar words, he begins his prophecy against the northern kingdom, Israel. Thus saith Yahweh, for 3 transgressions of Israel, and for 4, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they sold the righteous for silver and the poor for a pair of shoes. Not only did Amos confront the authority of the state and refuse to compromise his message, he proclaims disaster for an entire family. The entire family of Amaziah, the priest, who had sought to undermine his preaching. And elsewhere too, the words of Amos painted a clear and a vivid picture of the punishment to come. And while Amos doesn't mention the Assyrians, he clearly prophesies the leading away into captivity. And the Shalmaneser in 722 BC, Amos chapter 5, verse 5. Begin in verse 4. Thus saith Yahweh unto the house of Israel, seek me. In other words, it's a change of attitude, it's a change of direction. There's no more the riotous way of life, but seek Yahweh wholeheartedly, and he shall live. But seek not Bethel, nor enter into Gilgal, and cause not to be a Sheba, for Gilgal shall surely go into captivity, and Bethel shall come to naught. Verse 27. Therefore I cause you to go into captivity beyond Damascus, that Yahweh, whose name is the Elohim of hosts. Chapter 6, verse 7. Therefore now shall they go captive with the first that go captive, and the banquet of them that stress themselves shall be removed. Verse 9, and it shall come to pass if there remain 10 men in one house, that they shall die. Chapter 7, verse 17, therefore thus saith Yahweh, thy wife shall be an harlot in the city, and thy sons and thy daughters shall fall by the sword, and thy land shall be divided by line, and thou shalt die in a polluted land. And Israel shall surely go into captivity forth of his land. So beginning with Amos's warning message, Yahweh in his mercy actually provided his people a 40-year period of trial and testing in which they had opportunity to repent. 40-year period. That's a long time. 40-year period. It was like Israel in the wilderness. They had 40 years to change their ways. But they didn't. They died in the wilderness. We know, brother and sister, Israel has a special covenant relationship with Yahweh. And Amos agrees. This relationship must not be taken for granted. But for the sakes of the fathers to whom the promises were made, Yahweh's total sovereignty is finally revealed after the destruction. He promises a glorious restoration, but only once the proud have been humbled. Amos speaks of that glorious future of the people and the Messiah, the son of David, in Amos chapter 9, verse 11. In that day I raise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen, and close up the breaches thereof, and I will raise up his ruins, and I will build it as in the days of old, that they may possess the remnant of Edom, and of all the nations which are called by my name, saith Yahweh that doeth this. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that the ploughman shall overtake the reaper, and the treader of grapes him that soweth seed, and the mountains shall drop sweet wine, and all the hills shall melt, I will bring again the captivity of my people Israel. And they shall build the waste cities and inhabit them. And they shall plant vineyards and drink the wine thereof. They shall also make gardens and eat the fruit of them. They will plant them upon their land. And they shall no more be pulled up out of the land which I have given them, said Yahweh the Elohim. The Apostle James in Acts chapter 15, verse 15. We'll begin in verse 30. Acts 15 and verse 13. And after they had held their peace, James answered, saying, Men and brethren, hearken unto me. Simeon hath declared how God at the first did visit the Gentiles, to take out of them a people for his name. And to this agree the words of the prophet, as it is written, After this I will return, and will build again the tabernacle of David, which is fallen down, and I will build again the ruins thereof, and I will set it up, that the residue of men might seek after the Lord and all the Gentiles, upon whom my name is called, saith the Lord, who doeth all these things. James interprets the prophecy of Amos in a messianic sense. Thus Amos testifies to Yahweh's faithfulness, which will be manifested in the latter days towards his people. It is striking that almost every line in the last section of the book of Amos overturns the judgment which was previously announced. Brothers and sisters, it is our duty today. Now is our opportunity to reprove unrighteousness. We must not tolerate anything that this world does, wherever it's practiced, be it at home, at work, wherever you are. We must not tolerate it. We must let our light shine that others may see our good works. Glorify our Father, which art in heaven. Yahweh declares that he will rebuke the nations. Okay? We're not actually in that power to do that. But the individual is all about individual salvation. We can do it to individuals. We know that he will humble their pride, spoken by Amos. We know that he will cast down the mighty from their positions, that he will exalt the humble, but all in due time. Zephaniah 3 in verse 8 and 9, to his people he says, Wait ye upon me until the day that I rise up to the fray. I'm sure Amos, as a farmer of sycamore trees, knows what a harvest is. The harvest of this world is ripe for judgment. Brothers and sisters, there are a few examples of good today, in the world today. And I mean from the point of good character, sincerity, generosity, and love. We know that the wise today try their best to establish just and reasonable laws and regulations. But it is failing. You only got to look in your local neighborhood. Everything is failing. They're in perplexity. They have no remedy for all the problems they encounter. It's a world in absolute chaos. It's failing those in greater need. The victims of crime are further victimized. The wicked prosper, and the poor and needy remain. The prophecy of Amos provides an insight of the future. It reveals that the powers of this world will face an unprecedented upheaval which will bring great distress upon the earth. Daniel said, and at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince who standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was, since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. In chapter 5 of Amos, we read of this coming conflict. Verse 7. You will turn judgment to wormwood, and give up righteousness in the earth. Seek him that maketh the seven stars on Orion, and turneth the shadow of death into the morning, and maketh the day dark with night, that calleth for the waters of the sea, and poureth them out upon the face of the earth. Who is Amos asking them to seek? That Yahweh is his name, that strengtheneth the spoiled against the strong, so that the spoiled shall come against the fortress. Here we are looking at a verse which describes anarchy, and that's what this world is facing. We've already seen the riots in London and the surrounding neighborhoods. Anarchy is building up. It's like a time bomb ready to blow. Greece has come to a standstill because of an economic crisis. Anarchy is taking over there. And that's not the end. They hate him that rebuketh in the gate, and they abhor him that speaketh uprightly. This, brothers and sisters, is what we must face. We must remain iron-willed, sometimes hard-hearted, but for us to endure our time, we must be like Amos. We must therefore, if your treading is upon the poor, and ye take from him burdens of wheat, to build houses of hewn stone, and ye shall not dwell in them. Ye have planted pleasant vineyards, but ye shall not drink wine of them. For I know your manifold transgressions and your mighty sins. They afflict the just, they take a bribe, and they turn aside the poor and the gate from their right. Therefore the prudent shall keep silence in that time, for it is an evil time. That, brothers and sisters, is our day. The prudent shall keep silence in that time, for it is an evil time. And today is that time. Let the encouraging words from Amos come true. Seek good and not evil, that he may live. And so Yahweh the Elohim of hosts shall be with you as he has spoken. Hate the evil. Don't tolerate it for a second. And love the good. And establish judgment in the gate. It may be that Yahweh Elohim of hosts will be gracious unto the remnant of Joseph. Therefore Yahweh the Elohim of hosts, Yahweh says thus, wailing shall be in all streets, and they shall say in all the highways, alas, alas. And they shall call the husbandman to mourning, and such as are skillful of lamentation to wailing. And in all vineyards shall be wailing, for I will pass through thee, saith Yahweh. Woe unto you that desire the day of Yahweh. What end is it for you? The day of Yahweh is darkness and not light. As if a man did flee from a lion and a bear met him, went into a house and leaned his hand on the wall and a serpent bit him. Shall not the day of Yahweh be darkness and not light? Even very dark, and no brightness in it. I hate, I despise your feast days, and I will not smell your solemn assemblies. Though ye offer me burnt offerings and your meat offerings, I will not accept them. Neither will I regard the peace offerings of your fat feasts. Take thou away from me the noise of thy songs, for I will not hear the melody of thy lyres. But let judgment run down as waters, and righteousness as a mighty stream. Have you offered unto me sacrifices and offerings in the wilderness 40 years? The house of Israel. They did not once repent, brothers and sisters. In 40 years, you have borne the tabernacle of your Moloch, the chariot of your images, the star of your God that you made for yourselves. Therefore I caused you to go into captivity beyond Damascus, says Yahweh, whose name is the Elohim of hosts. Brothers and sisters, the day appointed will bring the blessings of the coming kingdom age to those who seek Yahweh, are expecting our Messiah any moment. Again, brothers and sisters, the time of restoration. Under this re-establishment of the kingdom of God, but the greater Son of David is almost upon us. And we will witness Yahweh's power. And this prophecy is fulfilled. That kingdom will replace all the kingdoms of this earth as we know them today. And only righteousness will be the order of the day. As Amos was categorized as the prophet for justice, that justice will exist in the kingdom age. The people in that day will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of Yahweh and his Christ as the waters cover the sea. And this today, brothers and sisters, is our day of opportunity. I don't have to say this, but I will. Yahweh is first in our life. And following the footsteps of our Master is our joy today. Finally, Amos said to Israel, again, thus saith Yahweh unto the house of Israel, seek ye me, and ye shall live. To us, brothers and sisters, quoting again from Amos, the scripture tells us, seek good and not evil, that ye may live.